The Oracle of Luna is a podcast with me, Bridget Ingalls, as your host. Here we have conversations with real live, present day goddesses who are actively and courageously doing their magical work in the world. Each episode is a bewitching journey with relevant discussions on topics such as Wiccan pagan spirituality, writing, culture, magical practices, art, ritual, and the craft in its many forms. Merry meet, and welcome to another episode of the Oracle of Luna podcast. Here we are with a fantastic guest. Her name is Stephanie Woodfield. Welcome, Stephanie.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. It's really an honor, and I'm super excited to get to know you and have my listeners hear about your spiritual journey and your books and Morrigan. So I'm just going to jump right in.
Sounds good.
Cool. We know that you're a prolific author and priestess of Morrigan and ritualist and teacher, but how did this all begin? How did your spiritual journey and devotion to the Morrigan begin?
Well, I think I've always kind of been on this path and maybe didn't realize it. So at an early age, I could see auras. I'm an empath, so I could tell things about people that, you know, they may not necessarily even know about themselves sometimes or want me to know.
Yeah.
So that I think kind of started it. I kind of wanted to understand what was going on. There were family members that talked pretty openly about seeing spirits, usually of other family members who had passed. My great aunt, she saw a lot of ghosts. her mom and dad showed up at different times. Her dad would come when it's something good, and her mom would come when there was something bad. And other people had seen these ghosts as well. So I didn't think I was crazy. I had other people talking about having these kind of experiences, but for the most part, my family was Christian, and they didn't really dig any deeper than, you know, this stuff sometimes happens.
Yeah.
So I wanted those answers, and that's kind of what led me to starting to practice as a witch and to kind of learn about, okay, all right, this is real. This is how I can control it. If you're an empath, you know.
Yeah.
It's not always something that you want to happen all the time.
Right.
So that started it. And my home life hadn't been the healthiest situation. And I think the Morrigan showed up way before I realized she was there. And I needed her. I didn't realize it, but I needed her. And a lot of people might be familiar with this story because I do have it in a couple of the books. But when I started working with a Celtic kind of flavored group, there was a big emphasis on you had to have a patron deity.
Yeah. Now, was this, Stephanie, was this in college or where are you from? New England area or?
New England, originally from Long Island and then Connecticut, and now I live in Florida, which is the natural migration pattern of all New Yorkers. I just did a little earlier than most.
Right, but that's true.
Yeah, this was in Connecticut. And yeah, they had such an emphasis on you have to pick a patron. And I had this, you know, you're a new witch. And this was high school, going into college years.
Yeah.
And I thought I knew everything. I'm like, I don't need to pick a patron. That doesn't need to happen. I'm going to work with all the goddesses.
Yeah.
And then the Morrigan showed up in a dream. I didn't know who she was at the time and basically proved me wrong, which she tends to do a lot sometimes.
What was the dream like, briefly?
I saw, I saw a woman in kind of like flowy black clothes, and she kept turning into ravens and then turning back into a woman. And she was kind of on like this edge of a cliff. And I just felt so drawn to her. And she exuded this kind of power and confidence. And she probably should have been, seemed scary to me, but she didn't. She just really kind of just drew me in. And I asked her, "Who are you?" And she said, "I'm the Morrigan." And then I woke up.
Ooh.
And then I thought, that's a crazy dream. Don't know if it really means anything. Didn't really know too much about Irish mythology at the time. I knew who Bridget was because most of the people in the group I was working with were devoted to her.
Yeah.
So I did some research, and the only book I could find that talked about her, which was only, I think, half a paragraph, said basically, do not work with this goddess. She's scary and she's bloodthirsty and it's dangerous.
Yeah. She's dark. And
she is dark. Yes.
But violent, scary. Yeah.
But she's all the things, I guess, that we don't really want to see in women. You know, if you see a god that's a battle god, we don't really think of them as dangerous. But a woman being forceful and being connected to war and battle and not being quiet and demure, well, that's, you know, that's scary.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. And also, you know, she stands for... power, really. And that's frightening. That can be intimidating.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very intimidating. But yeah. I think that's a good thing, though. I think those are things that women have to see in themselves a little bit more and shouldn't be thought of as scary. Because like I said, we don't see the male gods who represent the same things as scary. They're just assertive, you know, not scary, but she's viewed a little bit differently.
Yeah. Well, the Morrigan, and you can, you know, expand on this as much as you want. I worked with her a little bit earlier, like maybe 3 years ago, at a specific point in my life. And I noticed for me, she was, I mean, she's very complex, but I kept seeing a raven on the fence of our backyard over and over. And then I looked into this and I'm like, wow, I mean, there's so much going on in my life, but you know, I just looked, I looked at this raven and then I started invoking the Morrigan. She appeared in my cauldron and when I was scrying, and I just saw her as a sovereign, beautiful woman who was there to help me to face and overcome my personal battles at the time. But anyway, it's very personal and subjective. how we connect with
beautiful.
How we connect with deity and at certain points in our life. But how would you say that, you know, Morrigan, a little bit, can you talk a little bit about her aspects and groupings? I mean, I know she's a part of a holy trinity of, it's very complex. And Irish mythology in general, to me, is very complex and confusing. So maybe you could.
Yeah, Irish mythology is very complex and confusing. the gods do tend to come in groupings. Three is a sacred number. So the Morrigan is a title, the Great Queen.
Yeah.
And the three goddesses that are that make up that trinity are Anu, Maka, and Baiv. And sometimes we consider Neven as part of the Morrigan, but that's a kind of complicated. It's basically because she is conflated with Baiv. So they're kind of seen as, I think they were seen as a dyad at one point, and then that's split apart, and that's maybe where the association is, because they usually show up together, but Neven has a different genealogy with the Irish gods that is separate from the Morrigan, but they tend to show up together. Well, in general, like kind of what you described, she isn't always scary. I think sometimes she shows that part to us when we need it, and maybe to kind of get over the idea that she's a scary goddess, you kind of have to be able to deal with her on her scariest bad day, I guess, before you can see the good side. But sovereignty is a very big thing with her. Being able to own yourself and own your life and get through your battles. And, you know, I think we kind of see, we fail to see the Morgan a lot of times because we see the goddess of war and we see her in that scary aspect. And we don't see that, you know, battle is just part of it.
Right.
After you complete that battle, what do you do afterwards? How do you rebuild from the ashes? And for me, she's there as the goddess of sovereignty to help you rebuild, to help you own yourself and to rebuild the life that you want. And sometimes she's going to show you some uncomfortable truths. And that's just the way she is. She's not going to let you get away without looking at the darker things.
Yeah.
But that is for your best interest. It is for you to build a stronger, more, I don't know, more you being you, more yourself.
Not yeah.
explaining that.
Right.
You know, becoming the best person you can be and have live your best life.
And just to kind of strip away the things that don't no longer serve or are getting in the way of your evolution. Yeah. Aside from, you know, her complexities and different guises, we call her the Morgan because she's part of that Holy Trinity of three sisters, or she has those many aspects. But I've heard her called, you know, Morgan, just straight Morgan. Is that incorrect? I'm just curious.
Well, I know a lot of people call her just Morgan. I'm not so nitpicky where, you know, I have to tell you, no, you must call her this. If that's what feels right to you, that's fine. Yeah. I don't see anything wrong with it. Her actual name is An Morrigan or the Morrigan. Mm-hmm. It's just like the Dagda, who's her husband, is An Dagda, the Dagda. It's just a reminder that it is a title.
Yeah.
So I think you kind of become more of aware of that when you're working with the different faces, when you work specifically with Anumaka and Bive and find out they kind of have their own personalities. It's a very interesting thing. It's like God leap, multiple personality disorder,
but I know.
Somehow it's functional.
And I see that in Norse mythology a lot too.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
The gods are complex.
They are. So what motivated you to start writing your books? And I'm specifically the priestess of the Morrigan, prayers, rituals, and devotional work to the Great Queen. What motivated you to write that book?
Well, I think all of my books really come out of this idea where I feel there's something missing. I'm a creative person in general. I'm always creating something, whether it's a book or creating art. I make jewelry, I sculpt. Creativity is kind of like a madness in a way. I don't think I could not write or not create. So it kind of becomes a matter of what am I going to create? Mm-hmm. But as far as the books, it's always something that I see as a missing piece. I write the books that I would have wanted to read because a lot of the times I'm talking about how I figured things out. And sometimes that was a bumpy road. So you can, you know, kind of skip ahead and not make the mistakes that I did. But I feel that, you know, I don't want to write something generic. I want to write something that's meaningful to my own spirituality and that, that the younger witch me would have wanted to read. But Priestess of the Morgan specifically came out of this idea that I still had more things to say about the Morgan. Because my first book, Celtic Lore and Spellcraft of the Dark Goddess, that's going on a little over 10 years ago that came out.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of scary to think
about. Yeah, I have yet to read that, but I'm going backwards, I guess, or skipping ahead.
Okay. but I was looking at it and I was thinking about, you know, that was a snapshot of where I was in my practice 10 years ago. And a lot has changed. And I think that's a good thing. Our spirituality should evolve and change. And that book was born out of the idea that, you know, back then saying the Morgan's name in pagan circles was like saying Voldemort. People didn't like that you were working with a scary goddess. A friend of mine even got kicked out of a circle because just not a group, but like a public circle, like they were doing a holiday seasonal ritual.
Uh-huh.
I guess the idea was you had to step forward and say whatever deity you were connected to and bring a piece of that deity into the circle for the ritual they were doing. And ahead of time, they were asking, like, oh, who are you going to call on? And my friend had said the Morgan, and it just scared these ladies so badly.
Really? Wow.
They did not let her be part of the ritual. She was very upset.
Aww.
And obviously did not go back to.
Yeah, that's unfortunate that has to, you know, you have to be edited at that point.
Right. And, you know, that wasn't that uncommon. People really didn't understand who she was. The idea of dark deities in general wasn't very popular, I guess. You know, people weren't connecting with them so much as the mother goddess, which, you know, mother goddess can be scary too, honestly.
Absolutely. All right. So then you kind of, you know, develop this relationship with Morgan. You start writing these books. And so what does it mean to be a priestess of the Morgan? You're a priestess. And so I'm just curious, what does it really mean to be a priestess of the Morgan in 2022?
Well, priestess is a word that is different for every person.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's highly personal. My version of what a priestess is isn't going to be the same thing as what someone else's is. But for me, being a priestess is about both honoring the Morgan and being in service to her. And in service can be complicated on its own, but to me, that is being a bridge between the gods and others who want to connect to them.
Mm-hmm.
So that is doing public events. That is hosting a yearly retreat to her every year for the last 9 years. Where others can connect with her. It's also serving as an oracle, doing channeling work, which is something I never imagined I would be doing when I started all of this. And it's also maintaining that relationship for yourself and also letting that relationship deepen. And that's, too, going kind of a little bit to the last question, that is another thing that inspired Priestess of the Morgan. Not only did I have more things to say about the Morgan 10 years after I'd written the first book, but I had spent 10 years of being in service as a public priestess, not as, you know, a private person just doing my own practice. Because there is that element of being a priestess. Not everyone has to do public work. You know, sometimes the gods ask you to do all sorts of things. Not all of them are public.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I had those experiences and they shaped me.
Yeah. And so your relationship with the Morgan has developed and evolved and grown. So, you know, it's natural that you would just obviously write these books and become a priestess and have these sacred retreats. And another question I have is, what is Morgu's daughters? is this your circle or coven, or is it a retreat group? Or,
well, Morgu's daughters started online, and it was kind of just a group of people getting together online because we were experiencing that whole thing of, you know, saying her name is Voldemort. So we got together as a group online to exchange ideas, to share stories. So it was really a networking group.
Yeah.
And that has evolved and changed. And we're actually currently updating our website because, you know, the needs of 10 years ago are very different than the needs of now. You know, she's no longer Voldemort. She's actually quite popular now, which has its own set of problems. But that was how a lot of us met, and kind of what we noticed, although we had members from all over the place, a lot of us were in the same kind of geographic location in, you know, driving distance in New England. And we all kind of said, like, you know, wouldn't it be cool if we all got together and we got to do, you know, some rituals to the Morgan and maybe had a weekend of it. And I think most of the people who know me well know, don't tell me a really good idea. Even if you think it's not like a doable idea, I'm going to think that's a cool idea. I'm just going to go do it.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what I did.
And that's what Morgan would do.
I'm sure she had a lot to do with it, honestly, putting all the pieces together. It's like, hey, look, this person lives near you. This person lives near you, too. So that is how many of us who are involved in the Morgan's Call Retreat, which is hosted in Connecticut, started. So we did that, and it was all people who had met through Morgu's daughters, and then other people started coming in as well and have just become this amazing community that honors the Morgan every year in Connecticut. And we have people that come from all over the place now, just not New England. So it kind of grew out of that. But yeah, I'm sure that was the Morgan tricking me into doing things, because I'm a very introverted person.
Yeah.
Me hosting a big event and doing public ritual was not something that was on my radar at all. But, you know, she decided otherwise.
Right. She wanted you to do it, so she did it for you, or may put the fire under your butt to get it done, basically. So some of our listeners may be new to working with the Morgan, or even goddesses in general. How would you suggest that they could maybe begin to develop a relationship with the Morgan?
Well, there's a lot of different ways you can go about it. My newest book, Dedicant Devotee Priest, talks a lot about devotional relationship at different levels, because I very strongly believe not everyone has to be a priestess. I think we have this whole idea of you got to level up in paganism, and it's not about collecting merit badges.
Right.
There's some people that are always going to be just a devotee of a deity, and that's completely okay. There's others that are going to have oaths and different deeper relationships with them and be a dedicant. And there's others that are going to be in service as priests. So I think that book would be a great starting point to help you. But something that I point out in that book is that how you connect to deity, there is no recipe. It's not like spell work where I can tell you, okay, on the full moon, do this, say this, use these ingredients. And,
right.
You know, there's a pretty good possibility if I do that spell and you do that spell that we'll both have very good results, because it's more formulaic than anything. Connecting to deity is not. So yeah. I think the first thing you have to start with is think about how you want to connect to deity. What kind of relationship is it going to be? Are you going into that relationship because you have a crisis and you need something? Is it something that you want to start as a conversation where you're just seeing if that deity is someone that might be a good fit for you or have a good influence on your life? There's a lot of ways you could do that. I think probably the one most people are familiar with is just creating an altar. And,
yeah.
You know, lighting a candle, making an offering. And that is, to be honest, a very good way of doing it. That's where I started.
Mm-hmm.
But I can also tell you on the flip side of that, I have definitely done the exact same thing. Built this fancy altar, got all sorts of things together, made it look very nice, lit the incense, and waited. I was like, okay, what happens now?
Yeah.
Like, okay, there's no direct phone line to the gods, right?
So there has to be some kind of energetic feel, my opinion, to really connect.
So how you get that energetic feel is going to be different for every person. You might have to work on your meditation skills. You might have to work on journey work, like having skills in that. Or another very useful thing is honestly just having a cup of coffee with the Morgan. You're going to have a cup of coffee anyway in the morning, at least if you're like me. And I'm not a morning person either, so that kind of helps as well. But e-offering can be something that you may not think of normally. Pour her a cup of coffee and talk to her. See what comes of that, and leave some space in there for her to reply. I think a lot of times, even if we're sitting in front of the altar, we say things to deity and, you know, we put a lot of things out there, but we don't always give them that quiet moment to respond, to listen to what is coming back. And that's kind of the hard thing. You have to learn to be able to listen and recognize her energy, which kind of falls into the next suggestion, which would be do it regularly.
Exactly. Yeah.
Even if it's a couple minutes a day, that's fine. If it's on your drive to work or whatever it is, if you only have 2 minutes in the day, that's fine. But if you're consistent with it, you will learn to recognize her energy and to recognize the voice that she speaks to you with. And, you know, that can be the most meaningful thing of all. I love great big rituals where you get that kind of bang of, you know, you immediately feel deity's presence. Those are wonderful, but you can't do them every single day.
Right.
You have to kind of build that connection in those quiet moments where, you know, if you're having a horrible day at work, you can reach out to that connection and draw on it. That's going to be a more valuable skill than having that big ritual moment.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because we have this expectation, especially when we're first starting out, that these big rituals are going to, they're really going to solve everything. They're really going to, you know, fill the void. They're going to make me completely spiritually fulfilled in every way. And, you know, it doesn't work like that. You have to put in the effort. You have to put in the work yourself. And like you said, start that connection and be consistent about it.
Absolutely. And I mean, if you look for those big rituals to have those big moments, and that's all you end up doing, sometimes it can be like bad moments afterwards. Like you're going to ask the Morgan and ritual to, you know, make your life better or fix your problems, and you don't take that time to talk to her, she might just kind of shake up everything because you're not listening. And just when things come tumbling down, you asked her for it. So it could have some unforeseen consequences there.
Yeah. And I just, I think that as a priestess of the Morrigan, you're really involved in the local, I'm sure your circle and your community, the Morrigu's Daughters. I'm just curious, do you have any like new or upcoming books or workshops or events coming up in the near future?
Well, we're going to do 2023 Morgan's Call Retreat, the first weekend of June in 2023.
Ooh.
We're continuing it on. I actually, when I started that, I had offered 9 years to the Morgan. I wasn't even sure if the first year was going to, if it was going to go past that, but I promised her if this goes well, I will keep doing this for 9 years, since nine is a number that's associated with her. Didn't really think of it at the time of how long 9 years is, but last year actually marked the completion of that promise to her. And my kind of second in command, my operation manager, Karen, she's going to be taking over, so I can kind of take a step back and relax a little bit. But I'm really excited that there's a new generation of Morgan priestesses that are going to be continuing this event. So, June 2023, mm-hmm. If you're in the Connecticut area, and if you want to check out my website, stephaniewoodfield.com, there'll be more information on that. I'm actually going to be doing something locally very soon. November 19th in Castleberry is going to be Pagans in the Park, which is a local event that I run. Just kind of a get together. It's kind of like a pagan pride, but we do it pretty often throughout the year, and kind of excited to be able to start that again.
Yeah. After COVID.
We had to stop.
Yeah. Well, that's, and that's what I'm hearing over and over, and it's really exciting and healthy that we're all getting back into our communities and participating in ritual and ceremony again. So that's, it's really such a life affirming thing.
I think that's one of the hardest things. I mean, because so much of paganism is going to different events and, you know, delving into your spirituality there, whether it's a festival, a retreat, or, you know, the local group that gets together for the holidays. Losing that for 2 years, that was tough.
It was tough
for me. So
absolutely. It was for many people, including myself. But you know, that you kind of work around it and you develop your other skills and, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's where your personal practice really is the thing that keeps you going.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this has been really nice. I've really enjoyed speaking with you. And I just really encourage everybody to check out Stephanie's website and, you know, do you have a Facebook page or Instagram?
Yes, you can find me on Facebook under my name, Stephanie Woodfield. I'm there.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you again for being on my show and having our little chat. And I've learned a lot, and I'm just wishing you the very best in all your endeavors. And I'm personally reading your book right now and going to move on to your first book. So I'm going to backtrack, but I'm finding your writings to be really, really beautiful and very, very detailed. And you're such a knowledgeable person on Irish mythology.
Aw, thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for having me on your show.
You're welcome. All right, then. So that is it. And I just want to say happy lunar eclipse to everybody out there. Hope it's a meaningful one. And take care and see you next time. Bye-bye. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. And if you did, please consider supporting my podcast via PayPal on my PayPal.me/Oracle of Luna Podcast. The link is in the show notes. And also feel free to share the magic of my podcast with others. Thank you, and blessed be.